interviewing Bob King for the History of Technology at Weber State University.
King? B-O-B? K-I-N-G. California? Or Deep Deer Lake, California, July 27th, 1952. Kind of started just shortly after I was born, but my primary education started actually in California at a junior college. And I went into a field of technical television, so it was maintaining broadcast television. And as a, it was a two-year program, they had unlimited, well not unlimited, but plenty of students to go into the production side of it. They actually limited it to 30 per year. On the technical side, they take as many as they could get. Year, 2 years I was there, there were three of us. Mm-hmm. So we had like 10% of what the rest of the curriculum was, the rest of the program. The advantages there was, you know, real small class size type of thing. Mm-hmm. We got to work real close with the engineers. And they kind of had a philosophy. There was, you could go and learn as much as you wanted to. You could spend as much time with the engineers as you wanted. So I was living in a boarding house down in Colton, California, which is real close to the college. And I'd go home on the weekends. It's about, a 40-mile drive, but it's about 5,000 foot elevation change. And wintertime, I just can't always get through it. Basically what I do, I'd spend my whole week down there and I'd spend it at the college. All my spare time really spent in that TV studio. And I was able to help them, and it was kind of a win-win situation. I did good work with them, helped them, and then they explained things that they were doing as they were doing. And you got to understand the day-to-day operation of the television station and the maintenance of all of that really well. And I really, really, really enjoyed it. Lots of things, kind of technically oriented, and that's kind of my field, what I enjoy. What I didn't like was kind of the production side of things, and a lot of the talent had real big egos and all that, and it just didn't really appeal to me. And I wasn't sure television's really what I wanted to go into. It can be very, very stressful, because things are all by time. Now, at this time, this is back in 1970, didn't have editing like they have now, so when you did a show, you recorded a show, you recorded the beginning, the title sequence, the show, and the ending sequence, and kept it within the right time frame. And now, they don't worry about it, they shoot a bunch of video, and piece it all together, but editing equipment just kind of a whole process of it. But I looked at other schools, my dad wanted me to get a four-year degree, he didn't have the opportunity to do that, and he encouraged me to do that. So I got looking around at other schools. Northern Arizona University had a good communications program, and so did Weber State. Actually, Northern Arizona University is located near Flagstaff, which is the same exact area that I came from, the pine trees and all that. And Utah is different and everything. So I thought, well, I'll try something different. So I came here. Spoke with Mr. Murray, department chair for electronics. And so I came here looking at going into electronics, but more of a communications line. They offer courses in radar, microwave, electronics communication, microwave. Still used today, now we use fiber for most things, but radar or microwave was the main vehicle for distance transmission of information, where you couldn't get wires. So you built a mountain probably on top of the microwave and just have relays and 10 of them. And they built satellites and all that. So that was really intriguing. So that's what I came. Mm-hmm. And so I started taking all those programs. Started going into the digital area where Carol was coming in and technology was changing, so they changed their program form. And I was lucky enough to get all of those communications programs. That's kind of different than the communications department's communication. This was the technology for communications. So I really lucked out. I got all of that stuff before they kind of dropped into the digital side of things. And I got started with that. But shortly after I was here, I got asked to help the actual department that we're in now, to help them with the video production. We needed an extra camera operator. Actually, this was just shortly after the education building was built, and they were doing some micro teaching. Education was teaching teachers to teach. They used these little micro teaching segments to do that. We were videotaping one of those and did that as a production, so they could use that as examples. So anyway, I met the department head, and he was the director of the program, the television program. And so, you know, we introduced, and he showed me the camera and stuff, and said, well, that's the same problem, you know. So we got going in the production, and he's calling shots, switching between different cameras. We're doing the show, asked me if he's doing it. And he says, you had some experience before, haven't you? Yeah, he's been on the camera before and stuff. So yeah, a little bit. So I want to see him in my office afterwards. So anyway, I went to his office afterwards and he says, you want a job? And so I said, well, I really didn't need to. I worked in construction with my dad and I worked 4 months in California, with enough money to pay out-of-state tuition, pay to live here with other immigrants, and still go to school and not have to. But have an extra spending money to pay. So I said, well, you know, I really don't need to work. He said, if you could just work productions, just be counting on those. He said, you know, that'd be a huge number of hours a week, $60 a week. If you could just help us, that would be super good. So that's what I did. I started helping on productions. And then on campus, they had troubles with electronic systems, being able to repair things. Television is the key to maintenance of television is that if you're on air or something's going, something breaks, you've got to fix it. Fix it now as fast as you can. And it's not that you ignore any rules, but you can break rules if you have to. Mm-hmm. It's like proper soldering techniques. Thin wires before you make connections and stuff like that. Well, in an emergency situation, you don't solder them, you just throw it together. You can't go on as fast as you can. Once you're off air, then you come back. So anyway, that's kind of my forte, and I kept good luck with that. And so I started helping fixing things, some equipment, you know, on it, and get it going for them that way. So, and I started doing other maintenance on things for them, you know, an extra hour. So anyway, I guess they had confidence in me. Anyway, they created a position, and it was advertised. Only one other person applied for it, but the experience they had in COVID gave me an advantage. But so I was hired on in 75. Kind of backed off on my additional education for a little while. So I was working in the day and it was hard to finish electronics in the day. So I ended up changing to communications, which could be more advanced. And I got more interesting. So I actually have, it's kind of weird because it's not an electronics engineering background totally, it's a minor, but I have communications. What my responsibilities are, the technical part of it. I do multimedia, so it's video and audio based instruction now. So it's actually the perfect fit.
Okay. So what is your typical day at work like? What
does that mean? Well, I've kind of, over time, things have changed, and now more in kind of administrative positions, and for the majority of the time, I maintain television equipment, worked in productions, and that was something that supports that. As the department grew and things changed, we had other directors and kind of got rid of some of the television area, and I was moving more into computer-based instruction. And then one of the big problems we had at computer-based instruction is you can't use what you produce if you don't have rooms that can display it. So about 10 years ago, started on putting in multimedia classrooms and facilitate it. And so I did that for a few years. We had some state money to do that. Got that going, and then my boss wanted me to go other areas, and kind of left that on its own for a little bit, and it didn't go as well as it should have. So it's kind of come around, and now that's one of my responsibilities, are putting in multimedia classrooms and designing those. So I've done it, designed the system that they have out at this campus, and now on a kind of slimmed down version of that we're trying to put in all of the classrooms that we have on campus. Davis campus, we have lots of money, and it was budgeted for it, and so we could do it real fancy. To retrofit all the existing classes and all of that, it'd be really, really expensive. So we're going to put in a more cost-effective solution. My actual position right now is assistant manager under technology services, and building assistant supervisor. But I'm over what used to be called instructional development and instructional technology, CATS, communication arts and technologies. That was changed to multimedia. When I was hired on back in 75, there were photographer Clark Taylor, Karen Moomer, graphic artist, and myself were all hired on. And most everybody else finally migrated out, but the three of us stayed on for, actually, I've been here 30 years now. Clark and Karen are all here. Karen's retired now. Clark is still here. He's about 33 years old. But we were started with a supervisor that really gave you the latitude to do your job and really support you. And our department has always really worked together as a good team. And that's one of the things I enjoy here is that teamwork that this department has had. We work real close together. We support each other really well. Things you do like putting together a video, a lot of times you use photographs, you can have a photographer help you. We've enjoyed that, and we've known that's been one of our main keys. So as Karen retired and we talked about consolidating our department and everything, people were saying, oh, that's a good idea. They work together really well and stuff. And so I asked and stepped up to say, yeah, I'll kind of manage the department. Not necessarily my first choice, but I really like working with technology. And so we tried to minimize the administrative parts of it. So I kind of have that role. I still support, I help the other person that's our videographer. I still work with him very close. He's probably needs the most help because those productions are bigger and need more manpower. And so we definitely help him. So I just stay very close with that. My department supports multimedia, the development of it, producing it, the distribution of it.
So along with putting together the Davis system, bringing the smaller systems in classroom here, what have been some of the other major projects that you've done over the years?
Over the years, some of the biggest projects I've worked on, I think, the new SAT satellite. We started out, it's kind of a quick phone call or an emergency phone call, and they decided to do a video documentary about this new SAT satellite. And it was the first, it's called the Getaway Special, or gas can, and it was a container that would go up in the space shuttle, be opened up to the atmosphere, have experiments on there and take tests from it. it back down and evaluate it. Well, what Weaver was doing was the launchable satellite, so actually the satellite that would leave the space shuttle, go up in the gas can. So they worked with the University of New Mexico. They developed the lid, the gas can. They'd open the lid, you know, partway and expose it to the atmosphere, not the atmosphere. And close it and bring it back down. With ours, they had opened up all the way, so this is a satellite that we jumped out. So they partnered with Utah State, was for the Federal Aviation Administration. It was kind of their project. It was a satellite that would orbit the Earth about 200 nautical miles above the Earth, and take about 90 minutes to do a revolution. Okay, and it had L-band antennas, which are like microwave, which is what radar is. And it would take, like airports use radar for planes coming in and out. Well, as these dishes go around and they send out the signal and everything, if they're aimed up too high, okay, they miss planes and they don't. If it's aimed too low, it hits the ground and they lose coverage. So we've got to be like parallel to the Earth horizon. There's two ways to calibrate this. One will send a plane around, okay, and fly all over, up and down, all different elevations, and everything, and take readings, signal strength readings, to find out whether these dishes are aimed properly. The other way was to shut the system down and use the antenna as a receiver for noise coming from the sun. So then, while the sun's going down, you take readings on it and find out how strong the signal goes down. But that takes several hours, and the radar system's down for several hours. So the FFA had this idea, let's have a satellite go around, read these the radar signals as it orbits the Earth, save the data, it comes around and it's passed down orbit, and you can tell how well they're aimed. And every radar installation transmits signal out and they get reflections back, and they're tagged, they're coded with their own, with the origin of that signal, and the different frequencies and all that. So when this satellite was built to do that, pick a signal, capture its codes and know where it's going from, and the signal strength. That was the idea. As it orbits the Earth, take the readings next to orbit, download it, and so within 90 minutes they have the data they need to readjust the satellite to the conditions. Sounded really great. So they built this satellite, but certainly was building it. Incredible, all the materials, most everything was donated. Gilmore donated the canister and the price for that. It was like over $1 million satellite, and they probably spent several $100,000 since I was spent for the project. Incredible number of students. They met every week for a couple of years, all these people, engineers, met every week on this project. And they'd been going for a year or so before I got involved in it. I get a phone call one day. They're out at Little Mountain with the prototype satellite, and they're doing a shake test, a vibration test. And it's very, very impressive. They just take this thing and they oscillate it, so the satellite goes up and down, and it weighs like 60 pounds, and it starts going faster and faster and faster. So the antennas start picking up other oscillations and beating the satellite to death. So it's really impressive, and so anyway, they called one of them to come out and be able to capture that shape. And so I said, there's no way, I've got all kinds of commitments to satellites. The only way is if I can come work out right now. And that's what they. Well, that's what we want. Come on. Sorry. We're out of Little Mountain. It's a military installation, secure facility, and anybody with any kind of a camera or anything like that has to have a person. So I had a person that was assigned to me, and I could do anything without that person being right there. And I couldn't jump off of the camera anywhere. Which is fine. They had other projects there that were secure. They went out there and spent the time that they could out there, and we shot all of this vibration testing. Well, that was really informative and really useful because they couldn't get all of the people out there. So that kind of started that project. And we went all the way through the construction of that to taking it to Goddard Space Flight Center and integrating it in with NASA before they took it down. It turned out to be one of the biggest projects Weaver State has been involved in a long time. And it was a big success. It didn't work the first time we tested it. supposed to open this conference. Actually, it was on a Friday they were going to have this news conference. The satellite had been launched. We watched on satellite TV as it had been launched. And we couldn't see it go out, but they would tell us it was the astronauts. So anyway, they had to give it, I think, 2 days to charge the batteries. And then they would turn it on. And so they wanted to do it on a Thursday. That was the first day they could possibly do it. State one and the publicity to be here and it was set up to do it Friday. And these engineers wanted to be able to do that. And I was over there with them in public relations. Craig Nelson said, don't let them do it. He had a witness. He said, don't let them try to make contact with them. Wait till the meeting is here. Anyway, they pulled me out of the room like 2 or 3 times these 90-minute interviews and stuff. And the third one was 4 minutes. So just a lot of tapes. No, we've given our word we won't try to contact them. The engineer says, no, we've got to have some experience. And I said, listen, you guys do it. I've got confidence in you. You'll make contact with it. And when you do, you can jump up and you can get on the ceiling. You can be dancing all around. And I said, tomorrow when you're doing the media, he won't jump half as hard as you do. Well, exactly what happened. They did it. They wanted to do it. They did it. They made contact. And come back and respond to Cooper State. And those guys were crazy. They were yelling, screaming, hugging each other, jumping up and down. And they're trying to make phone calls to tell everybody else to come over. I had the number, at the Cape when they launch it, as soon as it gets off the ground, then it's turned over to Houston. Well, I actually had the Houston's phone number in my office where they're trying to call them to say they made contact. So I came back over here and it's late at night. I got locked out of the door and a few minutes later. So I'm pounding on the front of the button, give them the number and they call it. And they talk to Capcom, which is the commander. Well, they didn't get a chance to talk to them. They talked to somebody else. They took the message into the Capcom and so we're watching on satellite. He says, oh, we just got word from Weaver State. They've made contact with satellite. He just kept talking to the astronaut. Oh, that's really good. That's okay. It was one of the biggest things for electronics and then for Weaver State. The next day when we had the publicity here, we didn't make contact. And they actually stayed another 90 minutes for the next round. And what they would do is they'd track the satellites. They'd get information from NORAD, which is the satellite tracker. Given data as to where it was located. Well, the first day we had wrong data. We always had wrong data. But the first day before the press conference, they had done some things and they were off on their timing. But we actually were right on. So when we probably had it right, we were off. And so we missed it. And so it took a little while to get that figured out. But you know, it took a few days. But once they got that, they were communicating with the satellite. They downloaded an incredible amount of data. The students all set up times and they were running that satellite. And it really worked well. It was a great experience. It wasn't the perfect solution. And what they learned was out there, when you're out 200 miles out, you're picking up an incredible number of radar installations. And you actually can't, there's so many of them, they couldn't differentiate them. Pick just one. So there are a lot of changes, and I'm not sure exactly where it is now. Weaver State's not doing a whole lot with it, but they're probably working on that to narrow it down so they can discriminate on just one installation. That was good. One of the neat things I've done is archaeology. We get to Weaver State helped BYU in I-70. It goes from Denver over to Code 4 to I-15. Well, in that Clear Canyon area there, not too far from Joseph, just out of Rich View, they come across some bones and that stock construction that the archaeologists came in. There's a big mountain that they wanted to fill dirt. It had some sites on it, so they had to excavate there. As they excavated it, the initial survey was, they thought there were 4 sites on that one. And the other one said, well, I think it's 6. They got down to 9 or 4. And of course, they had to excavate all of them. Guys needing the dirt were covering them all the time. Beaver State went down, helped people all year. And so we documented that. We actually had 2 crews. We borrowed some Forest Service equipment for them. Had teams going out doing survey all around that area, you know, both sides of the road, searching for, you know, history. And then one crew would do that one day, and then the next day they'd go to a site. And it's real tedious, 10 centimeters at a time, but we really got into it, everybody got into it, for talking, so that was really good. 2 years later, we did a review down in Blanding. There. The problem they had down there is people were raiding and stealing stuff out.
But it's Native American
sites. Anasazi sites. So it was really, really interesting. And that, actually, in the video side of things, it's really interesting because you get to learn about stuff now. They're working on physics things. So they're doing all of the physics demonstrations that are in the industry. So you really get to learn in-depth type things. We started the documentary with the monastery. And I kind of had a rough road along the way and kind of fizzled out. But we met with the monks and taped them probably 10 to 12 times. So you really get a little rapport with them and do these productions. Sciences, you do that as well. I wasn't involved in it, but that was part of it. And it takes an autopsy. It's kind of gruesome in that, but you have to, you know, you're able to go in and go into an area that not everybody else can go, but you can capture that and then make that available to others. Technology's drastically changed and probably in a logarithmic pattern. When I first started, of course I was in television. Editing was just, you know, major production houses had some editing capabilities. When I first started, the machines I worked on were 2-inch machines, and it was 2 inches wide, and they had finally came out with machines that could do editing. But they didn't have fancy controllers. So you'd back the tape up both machines 10 seconds, play it down 10 seconds, you get the control on the recording machine. And as time went on, then they got these controllers that would do that for you, synchronized things. That was the primary way we did editing for a lot of years. Then things started going digital. And once they go digital, then it doesn't matter what order you shoot things, you can juggle. When we had editing, a script was always written and developed and approved by everybody. And so you'd piece it down from the beginning to the end. But if you get to the end and somebody wants to make a change at the beginning, you've either got to make a copy of it and use it, which is quality, or you got to start from that point and redo everything. Now, digital editing is just, you can swap it, you can add things, add time, take out time. Try it if you don't like it, change it. So it's like a word processor. You know, you just put it in, try it, if it doesn't work, cut it out, put it in. So it's really, really changed. Of course, cameras, all of the technology, electronics, has, you know, gotten more miniature, and made things smaller, the quality's gotten better and better. As we got into digitizing things like the video and that, the computers have come in, and now computers are a major part of learning and technology. Of course, computers change quite quickly. They get faster and faster and faster. Things take more memory, and so memory capabilities get bigger and bigger. I've seen that there. first computer we had had, I think it was a 20 meg hard drive. That was the first one. And now we're, most of our computers have 20 gig, 80 gig hard drives. Pushed out. And that's, you know, we see no end to it. Things are going wireless now. Computer's still real strong, but now it's being more portable. They're getting smaller and more portable. Laptops have a wireless card in there. You can walk around batteries and wireless going anywhere. So that's all coming together. Smaller and more portable.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Same thing in television. When we used to go out on remotes, we could just have a big panel van truck that we did our remotes in. But most commercial places had a semi trailer, a 40 foot trailer, and that was their control room and production. Now you can just take a little van and have everything you need.
Had to be
going up in August to make them. The new banner system, we couldn't use it until July 1, or we had to use the old system and have it all purchased and delivered before the end of June, and no place to store it out there. Mm-hmm. A branded facility, no storage whatsoever, and Weber State actually doesn't own the building until July 1. So there's no place on campus to store that material. So we said we have to have the contract. So they worked it out, and I'd had enough money in there to cover the installation. So I didn't have to do it myself. I wouldn't be able to do it myself. We had the contract to do that. And so we gave them the design, but they bought the equipment, they stored it, and they installed it. In the middle of that process, it had to be programmed. There's a lot of programming to protect screen, how it works, and all of that. It's kind of the philosophy that I've learned over the years and everything. And it's the opportunity that I've had at Weber, Weber's philosophy, that it all went into this. And then the programming part of this is the biggest thing that I've ever heard about was the way we do things at Weber really came out in that program. Now, once they got all the contractors lined up, the equipment going and stuff like that, they had to come up with this program. And I tried to write it down, but you're keeping track of every little detail. Is the projector on? You know, if you're gonna play a videotape, turn the projector on. Mm-hmm. You're doing some questions to patients. And they have these guys to hire to do that. Well, this contractor hired one of these programmers to do that. And so they had a special meeting where I had to go out there and kind of give them how we wanted this program. So, and the Davis building was one of six buildings that was funded for four different institutions. So it was Weber State, Utah State, UBSC, CDU, the four institutions. And they were all building, similar technology. And I had to defend our proposal because the others were doing it differently, and I had to protect it and fight for it. When we got down to the program, and they'd been through some of those before with some of the other institutions, and all the contractors were there, real foxy type meeting. They were really after the information. So they sit me down there and they started firing questions. So I kind of started to answer them. So let me give you an overall view of how I see things first. Kind of give you some answer. So we want all these rooms to be the same. It doesn't matter what room they go to, they're all the same. We want it to be simple. So we chose the design of the touch screen monitor, so when we have one monitor, we want the least amount of clutter on the desktop. We want it intuitive, the least number of buttons, make it intuitive, easy to use, clean and simple. Mm-hmm. So that's what we want. The shape of the button, the color of the button, isn't that important. So one of the guys that's been asking these questions is the program. But others were asking, well, what about the photovoltaic modules? Well, you know, I started answering those. The program, he starts answering three. Next question, he answers it first. And he said, well, if I understand what you want, it's going to be like this. So you got it. So they started throwing questions. And I said, no. The programmer was answering just the first question. So like I said, we don't care color of the button, the shape of the button. They wanted it intuitive. The answer is, well, this seems quite easy, quite reasonable. So off they went when they were programming. They brought it back about a month later. The prototype, they want us to see if this is going to work. Okay. So they set it all up and everything. We go out there, take a look at it. Same look that is out there right now. Okay. You'd have to make some changes. The wording on the wire. You have four positions of lighting, weren't the exact same words on the light switches. Okay. And we went as well, now those rooms should be the same, they're less confusing, less easy. I said, yeah, that's an easy choice. You know, the program said, well, I can change that right now. We changed it right then. Mm-hmm. And from then on, there was no more changes. We could find anything that didn't work before. I said, that's exactly what we want. It's clean, it's easy, it looks nice, it's intuitive. Okay, we're going to production. So they did that, programmed all the machines. Get all done with it. Okay, final inspection. Perfect. Just like it was in the classroom. Which is great. Yeah. That was the neatest thing. And what do been a big boost for Weaver, and then everybody out there wants the same thing here. It's not quite possible, but I was given some latitude to do that, and we got input from the faculty, we put that all together, put that into a package for the icing on the cake was as we were doing that program manager for all of the Jacobson Construction over all of these buildings, as we were doing that final review. He says, you know something? We're talking about overall the projects winding down and everything like that. This is this really evident because I worked with all of the other institutions, and he said it's real evident what Weaver State's focus is. He said Weaver State's focus is on teaching. This system is designed for the faculty to do their job. Mm-hmm. And so this system is an outstanding thing that you see. And I said, you just paid me a great compliment because that's Weaver State. That's Weaver State's feeling. That's the way. And we were kind of in instructional design background. And that's when I was hired on, the guy that hired us on, that's his feeling. We carry that philosophy on. And that was the most rewarding thing to me was to say, Weaver's focus is on teaching. Utah State, where they're pushing that technology, which they do, great. Creeps and bounds in technology, and they're using every bell and whistle out there. But for us, walking into the Davis campus, that's where we're going to campus here, it's for the teacher to teach to do their job. And that's where we're successful. That's when the faculty are successful. That's when the students are successful. So that's the
Along those lines, what was your most challenging? What's been the most challenging
aspect of your job? Most challenging? Trying to do the same thing on this campus right now. It's relevant to that, but I think that really is the most challenging thing. Put a lot of energy into it, a lot of research. Everybody wants to be as sophisticated as it is out at Davis campus. But the Davis campus, we were able to put $11,000 into the control part of the control. Mm-hmm. We can't do that for the 130-some years. We have about 20 sold that are already within the strong system. So what I'm trying to do now is we've been using resources from the RCC to help fund these and being to put in a lot of money. We're going to try to go to the administration and try to get some more kind of money where we can bring all of the rooms that aren't up to speed to this new system. It's not quite as fancy as it is out at the Davis campus. Mm-hmm. But when you talk to faculty, you explain to them, you know, you have to use a different monitor. This doesn't have a built-in monitor, but it's got the same basic buttons. But all of the rooms will be the same. Oh, really? So I can go to any of them. I can teach them every room. That's what's exciting. Real simple. Six buttons to control six sources, and a button for the projector and a button for the light. So we're partway there. I've kind of a quick survey of all of the buildings on campus, what they have. Our next, we've got ARCC on board. What we're doing is working with facilities management to try to get them to partner with us. IT division, which is the division I'm in there, that's one of the things I wanted to do there. That they support me. We've got ARCC, the one that does a lot of the funding. They're supportive of that. And so now, the next step is the provost. We've got to get with him. He's got some ideas for me. So we'll talk with him, and all of us present that together. And so far, I've been real successful, whether we can really get it to go. It's one time, bring everything up to speed. That's a tough challenge to explain on, but we'll just do half of it.
Yeah.
That's the struggle part. That's the part of the race that we've had.
That's really impressive. Quite an impressive career.
It's been good. Weaver is a great place to work.
It's been a great time to really want to be.
It's a pretty good place to work. I could make broadcast television. Double my salary. Mm-hmm. But I might not still be alive. The stress is so high, people get burned out, and they just can't handle it. here, still doing decent things, you're still doing that production type thing, but you don't have the day-to-day. It's like an interesting story. I was involved with KULC, which is now KU. That was actually Channel 9, was allocated to Ogden. That was communications department back in Peterson. Wanted to get their own TV station. Had been in Ogden and Weaver school districts, and they ran for a while, but it was difficult and expensive to make do it. And then a church, religious organization, tried to pick it up in the state. And John just found out about it and said, oh, Weaver, I think that's so great. Talked to the administration and everything, and they pursued that. And they actually applied for the license for Channel 9 that was available. And pursued doing that. So the communications department had their own TV station. Well, I was the only one here that really had a lot of broadcast experience. And I was kind of seen as being negative towards it, but I was trying to be realistic. And they got the license, they put in an NTIA grant, got some funding for it, to get it started by the transmitter and STO studio transmitter. And they had to come up with a website. 70,000, they had come up with 38,000, and couldn't come up with it. And they ended up getting an extension, and that was about to run out, and they ended up having to turn it down. And at the time, a lot of KUED was our own broadcast station, and they had set guidelines that they wanted to follow. And Weaver State was one of other institutions that wanted to get things broadcast. And KUED's quality wasn't good enough, or just couldn't do it and stuff. So there was a huge demand for another station to broadcast education. And Arvo Van Alstyne was the commissioner. President was the president here. And so the communication department said to the president, we've got to turn it off. We can't do it. It's no longer capable of anything. So Arvo Van Alstyne thought about it over the weekend and said, what if we licensed it to the Board of Regents? Part of Weaver's problem is they had to have a tower, so we had to have at least space on the mountain. We had to buy a transmitter. We had to hire more people and take the people. So KUED, they've got the tower. They've got the facility, the building for it. They've got engineers already. Why can't we get them to kind of run it? It doesn't need to be grand scale, but let's let them operate, give them some more additional funds and take it on rather than create a whole brand new. Very logical. So anyway, Carl and I signed a prosperity back then. That would be great. So they contacted the University of Utah and said, oh yeah, we do that. And they took that on. Everybody here felt terrible. Oh, we lost. And I was jumping up to them. I said, we won. It's the greatest thing in the world. Now, I was kind of blackballed from it because I said, and at first they were trying to run the station for $100,000 radio budget. $100,000 radio budget. But the salaries for technicians and that's going to run about $20,000 at that time. Quite cheap. You've got to have some people in charge of things who are really responsible for it. They were going to use all students as much as they could. It's fine. You still got to pay for power. Power at that time to run a transmitter, $80,000 a year. Just for the Utah Paramount, for the power for the transmitter. I'm not talking about your studio and lighting and all that. That power that's transmitted is electricity. It comes from somewhere, not from Utah Paramount. And so then they built it. Still not quite going to do it, but do better. We didn't hire a consultant out of Wyoming. I met with him. He knew what he was doing. They presented the report, it was the same thing that Dean wanted. We got done with it, and we had turned on and said, nobody has to work Christmas Day. Nobody has to work every holiday. Nobody has to work every Sunday. We can produce our program, take our time to produce it, and get it there. We have an advantage with the station being allocated to Ogden. If something's produced in Ogden and doesn't get aired, it just takes a few letters to the FCC saying, we're a community, we try to get these things aired, and they won't air it, and stuff. They'll lose a license to pick that. It's a real heavy
work short, and the person doesn't get done that day, you just shoot it the next day.
Yeah.
We're not on that day-to-day crunch. We don't have to have a crew of people that are coming up with programming to air all the time. We don't have to have a duty engineer there all the time running that program. We have it certain options. No, they have to do all that. We can produce and air what we want. We want. And we get. And we produce things we broadcast them on TV and do this. It's been a benefit to us. The chief engineer, every time I see him, are you sure you want to tell him that? Are you sure you want to tell him that? Because it is. It's a big burden. They're not getting as much money as they'd like to get for it. It's like, it's all work.
Yeah.
Reader State gets the benefit of being in the broadcast things. We don't have to worry about the day to day economy. Now we don't broadcast things much anymore. We do webcast and streaming. That's what we need to use in technology.
Mm-hmm.
And our PUP is in our partner teams, the administrative work of the streaming service. In fact, early this year we had to increase it. We had a level license that allowed 100 consecutive users, and we kind of exceeded that to be able to go to the next round up, which is. Streaming like graduations, those type of things. Faculty members have the introductions, the demonstrations, and that. Web page or CP, it actually, as you see the video, it actually goes to that human service. We also did a new thing to stream high school graduations last year for once they couldn't see their kids graduate, they could watch it.
Oh, that's great. That's really cool. Yeah.
We didn't get real accurate numbers how many people watched it, but there were probably about 40 people.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. 40
people.
Yeah.
Well, so we can always tell where they were at.
Do a follow-up interview.
Okay, sure.